Hi everybody! Today I'll be reading chapter 24 and 25, Avengers 1. Chapter 24. After Tony left the group, he found his way to the detention area where Loki had been held, and where Phil Coulson had died. He stood there thinking for a while, and then he noticed Steve Rogers had found his way there too. Tony hoped Cap was interested in picking up the argument where they left it off. He didn't have much stomach for a fight right then, at least not with Cap. But Cap wasn't looking for a fight either. He stood for a minute, reflecting on what had happened in their room. Then he asked, "Was he married?"
"No, there was a cellist, I think."
That was all he knew about Coulson's personal life. And he only knew that because of what he'd overheard when Pepper talked to Coulson. To Tony, Coulson had always just been an irritation. And now he's regretting that. "I'm sorry. He seemed like a good man."
"He was an idiot."
"Why? For believing?"
"For taking on Loki alone."
"He was doing his job," Cap insisted. Cap's stubbornness made Tony angry.
"He was out of his league. He should have waited. He should have..."
"Sometimes there isn't a way out, Tony," Cap said. And there they were again, arguing over heroism.
"Right,"
Tony said.
"I've heard that before."
Cap walked to him. Not quite aggressive, but definitely not pressing his point. "Is this the first time you've lost a soldier?"
"We are not soldiers,"
Tony said, barely keeping his voice below a shout. He was Tony Stark, billionaire genius. He was Iron Man. He was nobody's cannon fodder.
"I'm not marching to Furious 5.
"Neither am I. He's got the same blood on his hands that Loki does. But right now we've got to put that behind us and get this done. Loki needs a power source." He stopped as he saw Tony's attitude change. Tony had been struck by an idea.
"He made it personal,"
he said. "That's not the point," Cap said.
"That is the point,"
Tony insisted.
"That's Loki's point. He hit us all right where we live. Why?"
"Like he was talking to a child," Cap said. "To tear us apart."
"Yeah, divide and conquer is great. But he knows he has to take us out to win, right?"
Now Tony was voting. He had Loki figured out.
"That's what he wants. He wants to beat us. He wants to be seen doing it. He wants an audience."
"Right, I cut his act as Stuttgart," Cap said.
"That was just previews. This is opening night, and Loki, he's a full-tilt diva, right? He wants flowers, he wants parades, he wants a monument built to the skies with his name plastered."
That was it. Tony looked at Cap and showed that they had both figured it out.
"Son of a gun,"
he said. They both knew where Loki would strike next. Erik Selvig had nearly completed the greatest scientific work of his life. The machine holding the Tesseract was complete and ready for activation. It resembled the containment structure he had built in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s New Mexico facility. Pyramid improvements. This new machine was designed not to measure the Tesseract's power, but to amplify and channel it. The Tesseract itself was the core of the machine. Around it was a plasma chamber and a conical array of mirrors and lenses. When the portal generator powered up, it would superheat the plasma in the chamber. Then, the lenses would focus that energy into a beam that would tear open a hole in the universe and let the Chitauri through. Once that portal was open, Loki's triumph would be assured. No force on Earth would be able to oppose him. He opened up his laptop, the same one he had used when he was working with Jane Foster before they had ever seen Thor or the Destroyer or Loki. He went through a series of software checks. Everything was in order. Soon, very soon, they would do something no human had ever dreamed of being able to do. Not even the Red Skull had understood the latent potential of the Tesseract. And best of all, they'd begin the conquest using Tony Stark's arc reactor in his magnificent New York Tower. Selvig looked out over the city from the top of Stark Tower. By the end of the day, he thought, the world would be utterly transformed. Chapter 25. If they're going after Loki, Steve knew they would need all hands on deck. He got dressed and headed down to the holding cell where Barton was recovering. At least Steve hoped he was recovering. He knew Natasha was there, and when he stuck his head in the door, he didn't bother with small talk. "Time to go," he said. "Go where?" Natasha asked. "Tell him the way. Can you fly one of those jets?" Then he remembered that she'd been at the controls in Stuttgart. At the same time, he noticed that Barton wasn't in his bed. But before he had a chance to react, Barton walked into the room.
"I can,"
Barton said. Steve glanced at Natasha, who gave him a subtle nod. "Okay, then," he thought. Martin's back with us. He has some questions, but this wasn't the time to ask them. It could all be sorted out later. If there was a later. Okay, Garsoon? Steve asked. Barton nodded. Then suit up. An hour later, they're ready. Captain America, Hawkeye, and the Black Widow strode into Quinjet, stalling the shield tech doing maintenance. I'm sorry, you guys aren't supposed to... Son, Captain America said. Just don't. 5 minutes later, they were in the air. Maria Hill needed to get something off her chest. She knew Fury had his own way of doing things, and usually that worked. But she didn't like being kept in the dark about operational planning. Sir, she said, approaching him at his command station on the helicarrier bridge.
Agent Hill?
She stood next to him, and both of them looked out through the bridge windows. Those calls, they were in Carlson's locker, not his pocket. Fury nodded.
They needed the push. We have an unauthorized departure from base.
A voice said over the intercom. At the same time, they saw Quinjet launch, curving away to the north. Toward New York City.
They found it.
Fury commented.
Get our communications back up. Whatever you have to do. I want eyes on everything.
Maria Hill nodded. Fury had given her all the explanations she was going to get. Yes, sir. Tony Stark shrieked over New York City, moving as fast as he could, given the damage the armament suit had suffered in the turbines. He sure wasn't at 100%, but whatever he had would have to be good enough. Sir, I've turned off the arc reactor, but the device is already self-sustaining, Jarvis said as Tony got close to Stark Tower, his home, his monument. Now on the top floor stood a machine, perhaps 8 feet tall. It was a rough cylinder with a focusing lens on the top, and below that, a chamber for containing the energies of the Tesseract. Dr. Ervik Selvig stood watching it and also tracking data on the computer screen.
Shut it down, Dr. Selvig,
Tony said. He hovered near the machine, hoping Selvig wouldn't notice the way his thrusters were hiccuping. He was having trouble making consistent thrust. It's too late, Selvig cried. She can't be stopped now. She wants to show us something. A new universe.
Okay,
Tony said. Clearly Selvig was beyond reason. Tony blasted the machine with his repulsors, but he was surrounded by force fields of some kind. The reflected energy knocked him back and also sent Selvig and his computer flying across the rooftop. The barrier is pure energy, Jarvis said. It's unbreakable.
Yeah, I got that,
Tony said.
Plan B.
He saw Loki on the walkway that led from the landing pad into the penthouse. Sir, the Mark 7 is not ready for deployment, Jarvis said.
Then skip the bells and whistles. We're on the clock.
He sure couldn't take on Loki and the Chitauri, whatever they were, in the suit he was wearing. It was barely hanging together. He landed and walked down the curving pathway towards Loki as the automated assembly machinery took off his suit. Loki turned and went inside to meet him. Tony entered on the balcony level of the penthouse. From below, just inside the patio door, Loki greeted him. Please tell me you're going to appeal to my humanity. Tony came down the stairs and paused.
Actually, I'm planning to threaten you.
You should have left your armor on for that, Loki said.
Yeah, it's seen a bit of mileage, and you've got the glow stick of destiny.
Tony said with a shrug. He opened a decanter and held it up.
Would you like a drink?
Stalling me won't change anything.
No, threatening.
Tony said.
No drink? You sure? I'm having one.
He poured himself a glass and swirled it before taking a small sip. Loki watched, cautious and intrigued, trying to see what Tony was planning. The Chitauri are coming, he said. Nothing will change that. What have I to fear?
The Avengers,
Tony said. He kept his tone chatty, casual, like they were talking about baseball scores or the weather.
That's what we call ourselves. We're sort of like a team, Earth's mightiest heroes type of thing.
While he stopped at the decanter, he also slipped a bracelet over his wrist. Loki was looking the other way. The bracelet was a remote activator for the Mark 7 armor Jarvis was so worried about. Tony hoped he'd have a chance to use it. But with Loki, you never knew when things were going to go wrong. The Avengers, Loki said. Yes, I've met them. His tone of voice left no doubt that he was unimpressed.
Yeah, it takes us a while to get any traction. I'll give you that one,
Tony said.
But let's do a head counter here. Your brother, the demigod, a super soldier, a living legend who kind of lives up to the legend, a man with breathtaking anger management issues, a couple of master assassins, and you, big fella, you've managed to piss off every single one of them.
That was the plan, Loki said with a grin.
Not a great plan,
Tony said.
When they come, and they will...
Loki interrupted him. I have an army.
We have a Hulk.
I thought the beast had wandered off, Loki said, mocking him. And it was true that Tony had no idea where Bruce was. He was going on a wing and a prayer here, trusting that Bruce would show up again when they needed him.
You're missing the point,
he said, and his tone got sharper.
There's no throne. There's no version of this where you come out on top. Maybe your army comes, and maybe it's too late for us. But it's all on you, because if we can't protect the Earth, you can be sure we'll avenge it.
Guess said to Loki, and now Loki closed the distance between them a little more. He had listened to Tony with a smile on his face, humoring him. Now he said, hope your friends have time for me when they're so busy fighting you. With his last words, he tapped Tony in the chest with his scepter, just as he had with Hawkeye and Dr. Selvig. Nothing happened. The arc reactor in Tony's chest countered the scepter's effect. Loki tried it again. This usually works.
Well,
Tony said.
Best laid plans, you know the saying.
Suddenly angry, Loki flung Tony to the floor.
Jarvis,
Tony said.
Any time now?
Loki wrapped a hand around Tony's throat and lifted him to his feet. You will all fall before me, he hissed.
Deploy,
Tony said.
Deploy!
Lifting Tony to the air, Loki threw him through the window and over the balcony railing. Tony fell, watching the street rush up at him with incredible speed. If Jarvis was right and the Mark 7 wasn't ready, his part in the fight would be over really soon. But she could never count Tony Stark out. The bracelet on his wrist chirped, and the Mark 7 armor burst out of the closet, rocketing down after Tony. Keyed to the bracelet's homing signal, it reached him in midair. The armor opened up and built itself around his body while Tony fell. He engaged his thrusters less than 50 feet above the ground, and with a big grin on his face, Tony rocketed back up to have a little word with Loki. Nobody threw him off his own roof. He got to the balcony and saw a very surprised Loki.
There's one other person I forgot to mention,
Tony said.
His name was Phil.
And he blew Loki across the room with a repulsor blast. Thank you, everybody, for listening to today's episode of Avengers 1.